From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. A New York police officer is not charged with any crime for the chokehold death of an unarmed black man. 60 nations vow to keep up their fight against Islamic State militants. We'll tell you which nations fare the worst in an annual ranking of corruption around the world. And we'll find out about a New York study that shows how ants have been helping to keep city streets clean. All that and more in this half hour. I'm Michael Lippin. Thanks for joining us. A New York City grand jury has decided not to charge a white policeman with any crime in connection with the death of an unarmed black man whom the officer held in a chokehold in July. Wednesday's decision sparked peaceful street protests in New York, Washington, and other U.S. cities, with demonstrators expressing outrage that the jury cleared Officer Daniel Pantaleo of wrongdoing in the death of Eric Garner. It also came less than 2 weeks after a grand jury in the central town of Ferguson, Missouri, also declined to indict a white policeman who fatally shot an unarmed black teenager during a street confrontation in August. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder responded to the New York ruling late Wednesday by saying he is opening a federal investigation into potential civil rights abuses in the Garner case.
So Garner's death is one of several recent incidents across our great country that have tested the sense of trust that must exist between law enforcement and the communities they are charged to serve and to protect. This is not a New York issue, nor a Ferguson issue alone.
Pantaleo appeared before the grand jury last month, testifying that he did not intend to choke the 43-year-old Garner, whom he and other officers detained on a street on suspicion of illegally selling cigarettes. During the fatal encounter on Staten Island, videotaped by an onlooker, Garner raised both hands in the air. Seconds later, Pantaleo wrestled Garner to the ground, and Garner can be heard saying, "I can't breathe." In Pantaleo's first public comments on the death, he said he prays for Garner's family and hopes they accept his condolences. Iran has refused to confirm or deny U.S. allegations that it carried out airstrikes on Islamic State militants inside Iraq, close to the Iranian border. U.S. military officials say Iran recently used American-built jets that it bought in the 1970s to hit Islamic State targets in eastern Iraq's Diyala province. The Pentagon says the United States does not operate in that area. No other information on the airstrikes was available. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said he is unaware of any airstrikes in Diyala. Iran and the United States have denied engaging in any military cooperation against the Islamic State group, which is a mutual enemy of both nations. Well, senior officials from more than 60 countries have pledged to continue the fight against the Islamic State group. The coalition discussed its strategy toward the militants at a meeting in Brussels on Wednesday. VOA's Al Pessin reports.
The gathering of foreign ministers and other officials indicated the breadth of the Islamic State coalition and the importance governments attached to the effort. Secretary Kerry said in fewer than 3 months, coalition airstrikes have helped halt the group's momentum in Iraq and Syria. Its ability to hold territory has been reduced, and financial restrictions have hurt its money supply. And he said efforts on another important aspect of the campaign are also making progress.
In almost every media market that exists, and certainly within the region, their message is being denounced. Their message of hate is being challenged in public meeting places and mosques across the globe.
Secretary Kerry also praised the efforts of the new Iraqi government and urged its leaders to continue working to improve their security forces and criminal justice system, to fight corruption, and to ensure all communities in the country are part of the political process.
Part of winning this back, and this is what we've been saying from day one, is not just the task of the military campaign. It's the campaign that goes on every day thereafter in providing a government that is responsive, that is inclusive, that is pluralistic, that is freeing itself from any clutches of corruption that may or may not exist. That's what we want to see.
The group that calls itself Islamic State pushed through large areas of Iraq and Syria earlier this year, sparking the international reaction. Secretary Kerry acknowledged there's a lot of work to do to reverse those advances, but he said coalition members are prepared to continue, in his words, for as long as it takes to prevail. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has claimed responsibility for a deadly bombing in Yemen, targeting an Iranian diplomat's house. A Twitter message from an account linked to the Sunni militants said they carried out Wednesday's car bomb attack on the residence of the Iranian ambassador in Sana'a, Hossein Niknam. Yemeni officials say Niknam was not at home at the time. At least one person was killed and another 17 were wounded. New data show the Ebola outbreak is intensifying in Sierra Leone, even as it stabilizes or declines in other West African countries. The World Health Organization says Sierra Leone reported 537 new confirmed cases in the week ending November 30th, a jump of more than 150 over the week before. In its latest update on Wednesday, the WHO said transmission remains persistent and intense across Sierra Leone, with the exception of the south. The worst affected area was the capital Freetown, where more than 200 new cases were reported. The World Meteorological Organization, or WMO, says 2014 is on track to be the hottest year on record. The UN agency says the record heat is due largely to very high global sea surface temperatures. Lisa Schlein has more.
WMO notes the high temperatures recorded since January occurred in the absence of a fully developed El Niño, the weather phenomenon that warms Pacific Ocean water and causes a subsequent warming of the atmosphere. El Niño years tend to be very warm. The Meteorological Agency's Secretary General Michel Giraud says the provisional information for 2014 means that 14 of the 15 warmest years on record have occurred in the 21st century. He says temperatures are increasing because of the increased concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere due to human activity.
The worrying news is that the increase is not slowing down, it is actually accelerating. So, and that's very worrying news because it means that if no action is taken, it will be more and more difficult to stay under the target of 2 degrees globally. What it means is that time is not on our side.
Scientists agree temperatures must not rise 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels to avoid dangerous climate change. To stay within the 2-degree limit, they say emissions of greenhouse gases will have to decrease dramatically over the next 50 or so years. The report finds global sea surface temperatures were the highest on record this year. WMO Secretary General Giraud tells VOA the ocean absorbs about 1/4 of all carbon dioxide, CO2, that humans produce.
Without the ocean, this CO2 would remain in the atmosphere, so the concentration would be significantly higher, and the warming would be even higher as a result of that. There's a second impact. It's because of the warming, the ocean expands, and that contributes to a significant extent to the sea level rise. The third impact of the warming is on the melting of the glaciers over land, including in particular the big ones like Antarctica, like Greenland.
The report ties a large number of extreme weather events to the changing climate. It describes record-breaking torrential rains and flooding in places such as the United Kingdom, Russia, and other European countries, as well as in Asia, Latin America, and North America. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still to come on International Edition, we'll find out how Hong Kong student pro-democracy activists reacted to an appeal from their elders to end a 2-month occupation of city streets. An American couple has left Qatar after the Gulf state overturned their convictions in connection with the death of their adopted daughter last year. A Qatari court cleared Matt and Grace Huang of all charges on Sunday, but authorities initially refused to let them depart the country. The U.S. ambassador to Qatar, Dana Shell-Smith, intervened on the couple's behalf and said in a Twitter post on Wednesday that the two had flown out of the Doha airport. The Huangs originally had been charged with murder and jailed after their 8-year-old daughter Gloria, adopted from an orphanage in Ghana, died in January 2013. They were later convicted of a lesser charge and sentenced to 3 years in prison, but on appeal they presented evidence that the child died of natural causes. Global anti-corruption organization Transparency International has released its annual corruption ratings for countries around the world. Using a scale from 0 to 100, with 100 meaning the most free of corruption and 0 being the most corrupt, more than two-thirds of the world's nations scored below 30. VOA's Sharon Bain has more.
Somalia, Afghanistan, Sudan, Iraq, and North Korea, countries ravaged by conflict and repression, are ranked among nations perceived to be the most corrupt in the world, according to the report by the Better Governance Group Transparency International. At the other end of the scale, the Scandinavian nations and New Zealand ranked at the top of the 2014 tally as the least corrupt. Daniel Dudish, Transparency International's senior policy director in Washington, says without effective anti-corruption laws, economically challenged countries will have a difficult time attracting increased foreign aid or badly needed business investments.
If they see countries that are very poorly ranked on the Corruption Perceptions Index, that may give them pause before they invest in a new project, develop a new subsidiary, buy perhaps an existing company in that country.
The group notes that unstable security environments, violence, and war have made it easier for corruption to flourish. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Washington.
Two more Hong Kong students have joined three of their counterparts in a hunger strike to demand a genuine democratic election for the city's chief executive in 2017. The students have been leading a two-month campaign of street occupations to press the Hong Kong government to respond to that demand. But several veteran pro-democracy activists have said they think it's time for the occupations to end. Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
Several leaders of the Occupy Central movement and dozens of other pro-democracy protesters surrendered to authorities in Hong Kong Wednesday. But after filling out forms, they were released without charge. What happens next is uncertain. Priscilla Cho is one of the protesters who turned herself in to police.
I think, like many, many citizens in Hong Kong, I am grossly disappointed because there has not been any change in the government's stance towards this issue.
While some feel it is time to clear the streets, others have started a hunger strike in a bid to restart talks with the government. Beijing has dismissed the protesters as naive. But protesters who spoke with VOA say the recent weeks of demonstrations have awakened a new political movement.
Fighting democracy is not a short time we can do it. I, as well as the other protesters, we will try our best. If we can fight in these few years, maybe a few 10 years, our son, our grandson, will still fight for it until we see the truth, we see the hope.
Helen, a student protester who is studying to become a teacher, says through her participation in the protest, she feels more mature and knows how to care more about society.
Actually, I wanted to be a teacher, and in the past, I may just think I have to teach what I have to teach in school. But now I think it is very important to actually tell the student what is happening around our society and what is the correct value that they should have in dealing with this situation.
And it is not just in Hong Kong where a rift is growing between the younger citizens and a determined China. Over the weekend, the party of Taiwan's pro-China president Ma Ying-jeou suffered a stunning defeat in local elections, which analysts blamed in part on Mr. Ma's increased economic engagement with China and the turnout of young voters. China says the electoral defeat has little to do with cross-strait relations and urged Taiwan to consider the tangible benefits ties have already brought. Beijing hopes that message wins the day when Taiwan's voters next head to the polls for elections in 2016. But much may depend on what happens in Hong Kong in the meantime. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
U.S. President Obama has offered his views about U.S. relations with China and Russia, voicing optimism about U.S. links with Beijing, but pessimism about increasingly antagonistic exchanges with Moscow. Mr. Obama made his comments on Wednesday at a business forum here in Washington. He had some praise for Chinese President Xi Jinping.
He has consolidated power faster and more comprehensively than probably anybody since Deng Xiaoping. Everybody's been impressed by his, you know, his clout inside of China after only a year and a half or 2 years.
But Mr. Obama said President Xi's growing clout also raises dangers on the issues of human rights and cracking down on dissent. Yet Mr. Obama said he sees China as having a very strong interest in maintaining good relations with the United States. Mr. Obama said he is less optimistic about relations with Russia and especially its president, Vladimir Putin. The American leader said he has a very direct, blunt, and business-like relationship with Putin.
He has been improvising himself into a nationalist, backward-looking approach to Russian policy that is scaring the heck out of his neighbors and is badly damaging his economy. And sanctions are having a big bite on their economy.
Well, Mr. Obama criticized President Putin's intervention in Ukraine and the threat that he said that poses to other countries bordering Russia. U.S. space agency's NASA's technicians and engineers are getting ready for their first test launch of a spacecraft designed for deep space missions, including sending astronauts to Mars. If the weather holds for Thursday's launch, the new generation space capsule named Orion, with no astronauts on board, will circle the Earth and splash into the Pacific after testing numerous systems. VOA's George Putich reports.
Thursday's launch from the Kennedy Space Center will be a stress test, not only for NASA's new, most powerful rocket, Delta IV, and the capsule Orion, but also for hundreds of scientists, engineers, and technicians who were working on the new space launch system. At the news conference, NASA's Orion program manager, Mark Geyer, did not try to hide his anxiety.
Well, part of me hopes that everything is perfect. We land, high fives, everybody has a great time. But really, on a flight test like this, you know, if there are subtleties in how the vehicle behaves with the environments or subtleties with how systems actually behave with one another during flight, my hope is that we find that on this test flight.
Delta IV is 50% taller and can carry a payload twice as heavy as the largest rocket NASA had before. It was designed and built by NASA and Lockheed Martin Corporation. After separating from the rocket, the Orion capsule will fly around the Earth twice, going as far as 5,800 kilometers and re-enter the atmosphere at 32,000 kilometers per hour. Its heat shield will reach 2,200 degrees Celsius before a series of parachutes slows it down, preparing it for the splash into the Pacific Ocean. About 1,200 sensors will measure temperature, vibrations, acoustics, and many other parameters that need to be evaluated before sending humans aboard. Mike Bolger, the deputy director of NASA's Kennedy Space Center, says this is real progress for the space agency.
It's certainly a major step in our deep space exploration plan to put astronauts on Mars.
NASA says the new system will finally fill the gap left open after the retirement of the Space Shuttle program in 2011. The Orion capsule will be capable of taking astronauts to the International Space Station as well as flying on deep space missions. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Israeli lawmakers have agreed to hold new elections on March 17th after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he would dissolve the current parliament as soon as possible. Party officials decided on the date on Wednesday, a day after Mr. Netanyahu fired two key ministers and called for the early elections. Opinion polls indicate that Mr. Netanyahu's nationalist Likud party likely would remain the largest party in the Knesset or parliament. and its nationalist and religious allies would expand their share of Knesset seats, allowing the prime minister to keep his job. Well, billions of dollars are spent each year to clean up litter carelessly thrown on city streets and highways. About half that garbage is discarded food. As VOA's Roseanne Scribble reports, a new study shows how tiny ants can help to clean up that mess.
Ants do important work in cities, although you would never know it, from the 1998 animated film Ants. In this clip, Woody Allen plays Z, an unhappy city ant.
All my life, I lived and worked in the big city. Which, now that I think of it, is kind of a problem, since I always feel uncomfortable around crowds. I mean it. I have this fear of enclosed spaces. I everything makes me feel trapped all the time.
Z might feel trapped, but real city ants do not. They eat garbage. And there's a lot of edible garbage in cities, says North Carolina State University insect ecologist Elsa Youngstead, lead author of the study in the journal Global Change Biology.
And so what we wanted to see in this study is how much ants and urban animals are actually contributing to making this food garbage go away before we even get around to picking it up ourselves.
The researchers conducted a controlled experiment in New York City parks and on the grassy street medians along 150 blocks. At each site, they laid out two tempting banquets of common junk food, hot dogs, potato chips, and cookies.
One set in a cage where only ants and other arthropods and, you know, tiny animals could get to it, and then one outside of a cage where any hungry animal could have at it, including ants as well as, you know, rats or mice or pigeons or whatever.
Youngstead expected that the park ants would consume more food than their cousins who live next to the street.
But we found the opposite, where in medians, about 2 to 3 times more food got eaten by the arthropods than it did in parks. And it looks like it's most likely this one species of ants called pavement ants that were doing a lot of the eating.
They're not exactly sure why, but pavement ants are specially adapted to life on city median strips.
The ants and arthropods that live there could probably clean up more than a ton of food per year, or something about like 60,000 hot dogs or a couple 100,000 cookies.
The experiment also showed that ants and other insects are competing for the same food as rats and pigeons, and that helps limit the population of those urban pests.
That's an important job that they're out there doing that we never really measured or necessarily thought of as a benefit before. You know, an ant shows up in your kitchen, you don't really like it, but they're doing that same job out in the city outdoors, making it cleaner.
Youngstead says that points to the importance of maintaining a variety of green spaces in urban areas. She adds, the garbage-eating insects are tough bugs. Her work indicates that not even the brackish floodwaters from Hurricane Sandy in 2012 killed them or even curbed their appetite. Roseanne Scribble, VOA News, Washington.
The ants go marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah. We slaughter termites just for fun, hurrah, hurrah.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
The U.S. film studio Sony Pictures says it does not know who is behind what it calls a brazen cyber attack in which confidential information was stolen from its computer network. A Sony company spokeswoman is downplaying reports that North Korea may have been responsible, saying an investigation is ongoing. The company calls the cyber attack a malicious criminal act. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation and Department of Homeland Security are conducting a separate probe and also say it's too early to blame anyone. Sony Pictures is preparing to release The Interview, a comedy film about two journalists recruited by the CIA to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. North Korea has strongly denounced the movie as an act of terrorism and war. Well, that brings us to the end of International Edition on the Voice of America. You can send us an email with your thoughts and comments about the show. The address is voaasia@voanews.com. You can also send me your feedback on Twitter. My username is @Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. Well, your studio director today was Tracy Cotter, and the engineer was Brian Marcoulier. I'm Michael Lippin. Hope you're having a good week.
This is Today in History. On December 4th, 1619, colonists from Berkeley Parish in England stepped ashore along the James River in what now is Virginia and, in accordance with the instructions of their captain, dropped to their knees and offered prayers of thanksgiving for their safe arrival in the New World. That arrival, along with a harvest celebration by Plymouth Bay colonists in New England 2 years later, has evolved into the Thanksgiving holiday. In 1829, the British governor of India issued a regulation declaring that all who abet sati, the practice of widows throwing themselves on the funeral pyres of their dead husbands, were guilty of homicide. On this day in 1952, an anticyclone, a cold weather system marked by a lack of wind, descended on London. As residents began to burn more coal than usual to keep warm, concentrations of pollutants in the air built up dramatically over the next several days. The smog grew so thick it was difficult to drive. In the weeks that followed, perhaps as many as 12,000 people died from respiratory problems. On this day in 1844, James K. Polk was elected 11th President of the United States. At his inauguration, the song "Hail to the Chief" was used for the first time to announce the arrival of the president. Mr. Polk's wife, Sarah, recognizing that her husband's stature was not impressive, wanted to avoid any possible embarrassment in the event he should enter a room unnoticed. Thus began the tradition of announcing the president's arrival at almost every public appearance by playing the song. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The citizens of Namibia voted November 28th in Africa's first election using electronic voting machines, an example for other nations to emulate in the growing commitment toward the democratic process. 9 candidates campaigned to succeed President Hifikepunye Pohamba, who is stepping down after serving the maximum 2 terms set in the Southern African nation's constitution. It was Namibia's 5th national election since independence in 1990. And though the new voting procedures produced problems at some polling stations, with the newly introduced electronic voting machines and handheld scanners to verify voter identification, a regional election observer group and officials from the African Union said the elections were free and fair. The head of the Namibian Electoral Commission said that by moving into the electronic voting age, his country will produce faster election results and save money. For example, instead of spending 20 million Namibian dollars to print paper ballots for distribution around the entire country, the commission spent just 2 million Namibian dollars for printed materials due to the use of the electronic voting machines. The United States congratulates the people of Namibia for exercising their democratic right to vote on November 28th. The nation has once again demonstrated its commitment to an open electoral process and respect for presidential term limits. We applaud the active participation of the country's political parties, civil society, and citizens in shaping an inclusive discussion throughout the campaign. The extraordinary participation among first-time voters and women candidates reflects the progress that Namibia has made and the commitment of the Namibian people to a democratic future. The United States and Namibia share a strong partnership. We work together to strengthen healthcare systems, counter threats to Namibia's unique ecosystems, promote peace and security in the region, and protect human rights for all of Namibia's citizens, particularly the most vulnerable in society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage.
www.voanews.com/editorials.